Mr. Smallwood.
Mr. Chairman, I move the following resolution. Be it resolved that the National Convention desires to recommend to His Majesty's government in the United Kingdom that the following form of government be placed before the people of Newfoundland in the forthcoming national referendum, namely, Confederation with Canada upon the basis submitted to the National Convention on November the 6th, 1947, by the Prime Minister of Canada. So I say to our Newfoundland people, I say to the many, many thousands of Newfoundlanders who want Confederation with Canada, and I say to the members of this convention, that although the Confederates in the convention are outnumbered almost 2-1, although we are a minority in the convention, our recommendation will be respected by the British government. No doubt about it, Confederation will be on the ballot paper in the referendum. Our people will get their chance to vote for Confederation this spring. The many hundreds of people who have written or telegraphed or telephoned about this matter to me can be of good cheer. The British government will protect the democratic rights of our people against all attempts of a mere majority of this convention. Well, sir, the first stage of our great battle for the people is nearly over. It was a battle to get this convention to adopt my resolution to send a delegation to Canada to get the terms. But that battle was finally won. It was a battle to get this convention to debate the terms. But that battle was won. Now we are entering the last stage of the first half of the battle. We are going to decide whether, as a convention, we will recommend that Confederation be put before the people in the referendum for their verdict. We may not get a complete victory in this present part of the battle. A majority of the members here will probably vote against my motion. But, sir, by this time, the British government have a very good idea of how things stand in this country today. They are not going to be carried away by the vote of a mere majority of this convention, because they know that 99 Newfoundlanders out of 100 want Confederation to be submitted to them after this convention comes to an end. When this motion is voted on in this convention next week, next Tuesday night, that will be the end of the first half of the battle. Then the second half will commence after this convention comes to an end. Then, sir, a great crusade of the people will commence. A great democratic, popular, people's crusade to bring the truth before the people. The truth that we have never had a full opportunity of bringing to them in this convention. Then, sir, we will gladly and joyously call upon the hundreds and thousands of our people who have already volunteered their patriotic services to this great battle for freedom and economic security for the people. Remark this well, sir. This is not 1869. This time, the people are going to know the truth. They are not going to be smothered with the lies and propaganda of 1869. It was easy enough in 1869 to bluff the people with lies about their property being taxed. But this time, the anti-Confederates are not going to get away with it. No, not even if every millionaire half-millionaire and quarter-millionaire in the country, rallies to the call of the anti-Confederates. The day has gone in Newfoundland when the money bags could tell our people how to vote. That day is gone. We live in a different age. Our people are no longer in the mood to bow down and almost worship a man just because he has managed somehow or other to make a great fortune for himself. We no longer measure a man's greatness or his patriotism either by the money he has in the bank. When we talk about having a stake in the country, we no longer mean what money a man has, but how many children he has. What is the size of his family? How deep is his love for the country and for the people? When we talk about men of substance today, we include something more than just his money. Our people are on the march. In their tens of thousands, they have formed their trade unions and their cooperative societies. They cannot so easily be bluffed anymore. They have learned a lot these past few years. They ask questions today, questions that they never dared to ask in the bad old days. They ask questions about our vicious system of taxation. They ask questions about the cruel and oppressive cost of living. They ask questions about a system of taxation and of government that has held them down and made it impossible for a working man to live decently and rear a family by his honest earnings. Yes, sir, our people are in the mood to ask many questions today that they never asked before. They are not so easy to bluff as our forefathers were in 1869. And our anti-Confederates are going to find that out in 1948 when the referendum takes place. They will set out to persuade our people that under Confederation, their property will be taxed, their homes, their land, their barns and outhouses, their flakes and stages, their fishing rooms and boats and fishing gear, their animals and livestock. You'll have to pay taxes on all these things, the anti-Confederates will tell you. But the people of Newfoundland needn't bother about this. All this will be fully explained to them, sir, before the referendum is held. They'll have to be blind, deaf, and dumb, all three, not to understand, before this referendum is held. I guarantee that right now. All three together, blind, deaf, and dumb, not to understand what Confederation means between now and the referendum. Sir, our country is fast becoming a land of festering monopoly. If, sir, I seem to be paying a lot of attention to these modern monopolists in Newfoundland, it is because I know how they are driving the high cost of living still higher. We have seen some of these men become rich and wealthy men. I could name them for you, sir. I could name them for you. I know their story. I know their story. One by one, I know their story. This man, in 20 years, has raked together $1 million for himself by his monopolistic practices. This other man has attracted another million, sir. This has everything to do with the subject of Confederation. Well, as you will see, after I have laid my foundation, you will see my conclusion. Another man has attracted another $1 million to himself. And this third one is well on the way toward his first $1 million. I look about this town, and I see men in the past half dozen years, the past 10 or 12 years, the past 15 or 20 years, who have piled up great fortunes out of their comfortable monopolies. Where did they get their money, sir? Was it by the sweat of their brows? Was it by making two blades of grass grow where one grew before? Was it by starting a new industry? Was it by helping to carry on our fishery or our agriculture, our paper mills or mines, or any of our basic industries? No, it was by none of these things. So far as actual production is concerned, these men do not toil, neither do they spin. They are nearly all great supporters of anything and everything that opposes Confederation. They sit and shiver in their stylish offices for fear Confederation will come and sweep their monopolies into the ash can of history. I was never so close to our toilers as during those years of the dole. And always, as long as I live, I will remember those friends of mine, those toilers who were stricken down by beriberi, those children who felt the pinch of hunger. I saw the heartbreak in the eyes of patient mothers who had not enough to give their little ones. I saw the baffled, sullen rage of fishermen whose greatest toil and endurance could not provide their families with enough to eat or wear. I attended meetings of the unemployed here in St. John's, for who was I to refuse their invitation to go and speak to them? I saw them in their despairing hundreds, lounging around the street corners, waiting for the jobs that never turned up. I saw them line up in front of the dole offices. I helped to gather old second-hand clothes to distribute amongst the naked. I saw those things, sir, closely, intimately, personally, not for a day or a month or a year, but for year after year, practically to the very outbreak of the late war. I saw them, and I swore an oath to myself that never would I be a party, no, not as long as I lived, never would I be a party to allowing such things to come back to our people again. I would never be a party to any form of government that would make us run that danger again, and that's why I became a Confederate. Our people, sir, yearn for a square deal. They don't ask much. They don't expect riches, but only the modest opportunity by their toil of hand and brain to earn an honest living. They have no extravagant ambitions or fantastic notions of becoming millionaires, but they do ache for a common for common justice in their own land. They have asked for it, but in vain. When wilt thou save the people, O God of mercy? When? It's not kings and lords, but nations. Not thrones and crowns, but men. Flowers of thy heart, O God, are they. Let them not pass like weeds away. Their heritage a sunless day. God save the people. Shall crime bring crime forever? Strength aiding still the strong. Is it thy will, O Father, that man shall toil for wrong? No, say thy mountains, no, thy skies. Man's clouded sun shall brightly rise and songs be heard instead of sighs. God, save the people. When wilt thou save the people, O God of mercy, when? The people, Lord, the people, not thrones and crowns and merchants, but men. God, save the people. Thine they are, thy people, as thy angels fare. Save them from bondage and despair. God, save the people. Sir, I call upon every member of this convention to vote for this motion. I call upon even the bitterest anti-Confederate here to vote for it. Hate Confederation all you like. That's your privilege. But do not vote to deny our people of Newfoundland their right to decide the matter. We here in this convention have not been given the right to decide what form of government this country shall have. People have been given that right, and they will exercise their right in the referendum. If the anti-Confederates here in the convention want Confederation to be defeated, let them go out amongst the people and try to persuade the people to vote against it in the referendum. but it would be mean and contemptible for them to try here in this convention, just because they have a majority, to try and cheat the people out of their chance to decide the matter. Since the terms of Confederation arrived here and were debated, a new hope has arisen in the hearts of our people. They see in Confederation a new hope for the common man. They see in it a new hope for justice and fair play for themselves and for their children. They see in it the dawn of a new day for Newfoundland. Let no man dare to crush that hope that has arisen in our people's hearts. As for myself, I have accepted the words of the English mystic and poet William Blake, with the substitution of just one word in his moving poem: "Bring me my bow of burning gold. Bring me my arrows of desire. Bring me my spear, O clouds, unfold. Bring me my chariot of fire. I will not cease from mental fight, nor shall my sword sleep in my hand, till we have built Jerusalem in our green and pleasant land."
Mr. Higgins?
Now, sir, I also would like to say that I concur with the previous speakers in the views expressed by them on the communistic tinge of Mr. Smallwood's remarks during this debate. For the benefit of the member from Bonavista Center, I would quote to him the words of Sir Walter Scott: "Breathe there a man with soul so dead, who never to himself hath said, 'This is my own, my native land,' whose heart hath ne'er within him burned, as home his footsteps he hath turned from wandering on a foreign strand. If such there breathe, go mark him well. For him no minstrel raptures swell. High though his titles, proud his name, boundless his wealth as wish can claim. Despite these titles, power, and pelt, the wretch concentered all himself. Living shall forfeit fair renown, and doubly dying shall go down to the vile dust from whence he sprung, unwept, unhonored, and unsung."